welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. It really is my privilege today to have with me in the studio here at Campus FM, Her Excellency Mrs. Gina Abercrombie Winstanley, the US Ambassador to Malta. She's with us today to talk about Black History Month, an annual event which has been on the mainstream agenda now for many years. However, before starting this conversation, I'd like to say a few words about the Ambassador, especially as she's fairly new to our shores, so perhaps not everybody has had the chance to get to know her yet. Miss Abercrombie Winstanley is a career member of the Senior Foreign Service with the rank of Minister Counsellor. She joined the Foreign Service in 1985 and served as consul in Baghdad before being posted to Jakarta and Cairo. She then served as a Special Assistant for Middle Eastern and African Affairs to Secretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger. After a year of advanced Arabic, she served as political officer in Tel Aviv with responsibility for the Gaza Strip. She has also been director of the Office of Egypt and the Levant, where she handled the countries of Lebanon, Syria, Egypt and Jordan. She served as chairwoman for Middle East Area Studies at the Foreign Service Institute, which is the premier training facility for US diplomats. She's been consul general in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, policy advisor to the director of the Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies at the Department of Defense, senior advisor for Middle Eastern Affairs at USUN, and director for Near East South Asia Affairs with responsibilities for the Arabian Peninsula at the National Security Council of the White House. She's also has been director for legislative affairs at the National Security Council. Prior to that, she was awarded a Pearson Fellowship and worked on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for the ranking member, Senator Joseph Biden. Ms. Abercrombie Winstanley is the recipient of Senior Performance Pay, Meritorious and Superior Honour Awards, including for acts of courage during an attack on the US Consulate General Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, on 6 December 2004 by Al-Qaeda terrorists. Ms. Abercrombie Winstanley has a bachelor's degree from George Washington University and a master's from Johns Hopkins University and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. She served on the boards of the International Career Advancements Association and the former Forum for Education Abroad. Welcome to the programme, Ambassador.
Thank you very much.
Certainly not a career for the faint-hearted. Well, as I mentioned previously, Black History Month was instituted some time ago, in fact, way back in 1926 by Carter G. Woodson. It has now become a mainstream event, not only in the US, but also abroad, as we are going to hear as well. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Carter Woodson himself and how it all started.
Carter G. Woodson was a noted Negro scholar, professor, and was aware in the early part of the 20th century that the accomplishments, the contributions of African Americans to the United States were being overlooked or mischaracterized. And, as you said, started the observance of Black History Week in 1926, and it was expanded to a month in the late 60s, 1969, by college students at Kent State University in Ohio, my home state. And it began to have wide coverage in the late 60s and has also been observed in Canada and in the United Kingdom. Canada, I believe, also observes it in February, and I think the UK observes it in October. That said, it was a really meaningful month in my childhood and in the lives of many African Americans, because so often, as Woodson observed, contributions to the United States were simply not known. When I was growing up, it was rare to see African Americans in public life at all. outside of the church, occasionally outside of music or the art world. But contributions to science or mathematics or literature were just not focused on. And I remember, being taught about it in the month of February in school and learning about inventors or those who participated in the Revolutionary War, for example, in that particular month. But otherwise, it just wasn't available.
And what background did Woodson himself have?
As I said, he was a scholar, a professor, and as part of his aim to educate African Americans, because of course education was segregated when he was teaching, he gave extra emphasis and impact on the contributions of African Americans to the country.
Certainly the image in the media of Black American culture is not of the most positive.
Mm-hmm.
Is this part of the problem? Why do you feel these rather cliche mm-hmm. approaches are repeated again and again?
Probably because they make money. The challenge is that there are cliches about every ethnic group, including European Americans. But what you have for the majority part of the population is a balance. You will see silliness or foolishness or criminality, etc., but you'll also see positive images. Without people able to tell their own stories, it's hard to control what those images are. It's changed, I think, in more recent years, where there have been African-American writers, directors, producers able to bring a broader array of stories to media, to the broader public, but still it's a minority and it's hard to get the more positive stories told.
What about the maxim, to know yourself, you have to know your history? Black American population has an amazing history going back to the days of slavery, and this also is probably important to tell that story even to the young people, the young Black Americans today as mm-hmm. well, because maybe that story could get lost.
I think you're quite right about that. It's very easy, particularly now as there is an African American president of the United States, it may be easier for people to either discard what the past was, not worry about it, think it may be outdated or no longer relevant because someone with an African-American ancestry has reached the highest office in the country, some might argue in the world. That said, that is still one person, and there are gains to be made by a broad section of the population. It was hard to know our history in earlier days in the United States. Again, as I said, in the books that I studied on social studies or government or American history, there were no African Americans mentioned at all until you got to Martin Luther King. So pretty much we didn't exist till the 1960s and the Civil Rights era. So learning about someone like Crispus Attucks, I didn't learn about until I was a preteen, and he was the first person killed in the Revolutionary War. In 1768, at the Boston Massacre, it was someone of African ancestry that was the first person to die. That wasn't in history books for quite a while. So it does take more effort to learn about African-American history, and indeed the history of minorities in the United States, and I imagine this is true around the world. And so Black History Month continues because it is important to bring those details forward, not only for African-Americans, but for the wider population.
A discussion of slavery nowadays for people perhaps is a bit strange, in the sense that in American society or in European society, one can't quite imagine that kind of slavery, although, I mean, one knows that it does exist in many different forms. But I've never been to West Africa, where the ships used to leave from, but I know people who have, and they say that for them, being there has been one of those life-changing experiences.
As you might know, slavery and slave trading were part of the European experience long before the beginning of the transatlantic slave trade. It was most widespread in the continuing conflict between Christians and Muslims in the Mediterranean, and slaves were various ethnic and religious backgrounds. The later transatlantic slave trade that was associated with skin color began with the Portuguese, who decided to use Africans as a labor source in their colonies in the New World. So, slavery on the territory of the present-day U.S. began when a Dutch privateer stole slaves from a Portuguese ship and took them to the North American colony of Jamestown, Virginia. And that was about 1619. By the mid-19th century, America's westward expansion and the fight between states that wanted to maintain slavery and those who wanted to abolish it, the abolition movement, which began in the North, provoked, obviously, a debate over slavery and the Civil War. We are having a showing of the film Lincoln, which covers that part of his life and what led up to the Emancipation Proclamation. And we'll have a discussion afterwards as well, so it should be very interesting. I haven't seen the movie yet. As you know, it's had wonderful reviews in the States and other places, so we're looking forward to that. So we'll be able to have a fuller discussion on slavery. I have not been to, as you say, these send-off points in Africa personally either, but know people who have. And the ability to see all hope leaving one's soul in such places is a recurrent theme. My father used to tell me when I was young that the Africans that made it to the United States were the best, the strongest, the brightest, because you had to be to survive such a journey and such oppression for so many years. So he always said, take great pride in the fact that you have slave ancestry because you made it. There's a book that I read in high school called The Middle Passage, which is an incredibly detailed, evocative story about the passage getting from Africa to the United States and the fact that there were, you know, everyone was kept below decks and people were ill, gave birth, died, and were left in and tossing bodies over the side, you know, in a daily call of those who did not make it. It is an incredible story of survival for those who made it to the United States.
Certainly an inspiring story, without a doubt. What came out of that was the first thing that comes to mind before talking about people, obviously, who did well in areas like engineering and science and things, mm-hmm. but the fantastic music. I mean, it's yes. a cliche, but it's true that American music or Western music owes such a lot to the Black Africa, the Black American
and
music
African.
Base.
No, you're right. When you said Black African, the rhythmic beats, some of the tonality in it, and of course the blues, which is the quintessential American music, born out of slavery, out of the African American experience, even after slavery, going through the struggles with discrimination and disenfranchisement, the inability to vote, to participate in government, to participate in how you are governed or ruled, was absolutely key. And blues is present in jazz, of course, in rock and roll, in bluegrass, which people joke and say is blues for white folks, you know. So that core is there in all forms of American music and something that we have nicely and joyfully exported around the world. Everybody gets the blues from time to time, and the music, there's a wonderful quote from a Mississippi blues man who says, the blues is about pain, but it's pain that can lead to joy. And when you hear the blues, I mean, you can feel the misery and whatever those lyrics are and the music there, but you feel good singing it and listening to it as well. So it does what it's supposed to do, which is pull you out of the blues.
What about the role models for today, though? Mm. People who have Black Americans who are in positions in universities, in engineering, the architects. Perhaps you could mention a few of those people who really would be role models for today.
Yeah. Well, obviously the president is the most visible one, and one that I'm personally delighted that my mother, who was born in 1929 in Ohio, but grew up in southern Ohio, which was still very segregated, where newspapers identified whether you would be black or white for applying for a job or applying for housing, where they didn't allow blacks to drive buses, which I found quite amazing. But she said no blacks were allowed to drive buses. And when she got to Northern Ohio and saw black bus drivers, she was quite excited to see it. That she lived long enough to see America realize our ideals, and that is to elect an African American as president. And that is something that European Americans did. As you mentioned, African Americans are about 14% of the population. We couldn't do it on our own. It took America writ large to do that. So now there is no African American child that doesn't know that they cannot reach the highest office in the country. Mae Jemison, as an astronaut, was someone that my daughter did a lot of research on and was very interested to see a woman as an astronaut going into space, an African-American woman. Certainly, we are well represented at universities around the country, whether community colleges up to the top universities, Cornell West at Harvard, and Stephen Carter, who's at Yale and maybe at Cornell now, and he's an author as well as a professor who's written some wonderful books about middle class and upper class African American life. And again, you know, you can see in movies, you can see on television shows a particular strata of African American life, whether people are working class or poor or criminals. All those things are those stereotypes. And it took, I think, in the early 80s, the Cosby Show to show middle-class African-American life, which I was very familiar with, and something I was visiting another country in the 90s and seeing people of color walking around and working in restaurants and stores as I visited the country. But I was watching television in the evening, and I saw no people of color in the commercials or in the television shows. And again, that would have been my parents' experience of knowing that you've got doctors and lawyers and professors and teachers and garbage men and never seeing them in public life. And Americans are very serious about their television. So to have that disconnect would have been quite significant. So increasingly, as I said, starting with the Cosby Show, you could see that strata of African-American life. It's still far too rare, I must say. You know, for my own children, I struggled as I was raising my children to find images to reinforce their positive feelings about themselves. Hard to find in cartoons. When you're looking at cartoons on television, if you are not a person of color, you may not notice that there aren't people of color in those cartoons, or leading characters or positive characters or main characters. So it continues to be a struggle. But for writers, for poets, Maya Angelou is one of my favorites. I have several poems of her that I like very well. Literature, Toni Morrison.
Nobel Prize
winner.
Can't get better than that, really.
Yeah.
As a model.
Yeah, well, if you're a writer, absolutely, it can be done. And that's the point, I think. All of us need, regardless of your background as women or if you've got an interest in a particular field or dream, to see someone like you who's working in it, achieving things to make you feel welcome and believe that it's possible for you too, that there is a place for you. And until there are breakthroughs of one or more in various fields. I mean, for many dancers, Alvin Ailey, for instance, if you ever had an opportunity to see that ballet company, there weren't black ballerinas. It wasn't something that little black girls thought about being until a black ballet company was formed, and then I could go and see black ballerinas. And so then you have dancers or gymnasts. I mean, in so many ways, you do need to see somebody break through.
In fact, last year's theme, because I think it is themed.
Mm-hmm.
So
this year is the Emancipation Proclamation, again tying to the movie Lincoln, and of course the March on Washington, because it's going to be the 50th year for Martin Luther King's Great March of 1963, August.
last year's theme was Black women in American cultural history, and mm-hmm. and obviously since I have a prominent woman here yes. in front of me, I just a word about the place of Black women in general, mm-hmm. and perhaps also in your particular area of life, your career area.
Yeah, Black women have the reputation or the stereotype, I'm not sure, depending on whether you think it's positive or burdensome, of being very strong. I mean, you can see that in television and movies, you know, the matriarch, the strong central character in families, the ability to juggle many burdens, responsibilities, etc., which I think women do in general, but we don't like to stereotype too much. It is hard for many, it has been hard, I shouldn't say it is hard, it has been hard, but there have been many wonderful steps professionally. So you will find, you know, women lawyers, judges, etc., etc. In diplomacy, there have not been as many role models as I would have wished as I was coming up, and I certainly delight in being one now. When I joined the U.S. Diplomatic Corps, there weren't any African-American women in senior levels, and very few men, for that matter. For women ambassadors, it was usually a political appointee as opposed to a career diplomat. So when I saw a woman ambassador or assistant secretary, which is even more senior, it was someone who went through either through political donations or had done some sort of political life, not someone who had made their way through the diplomatic corps. So I didn't have very many role models in that way. And of course, when you're in the diplomatic corps and you're serving overseas, it's not that you see the whole breadth of who's in the diplomatic corps, because they might be serving in Africa or Latin America, and I never see them because I've been serving my time in the Middle East. I have had the opportunity to meet others who've gone before me since then through the International Career Advancement Program, which is sponsored out of the University of Denver, and it brings together minorities in foreign affairs and puts together kind of a networking and support system, which I found very helpful. And now I work very hard to reach younger women, African American, but also European American and young men as well. That mentoring is so important, I think, in any field. But particularly when you're not seeing people like yourself, it's important to have someone to take a sounding or sanity check or bounce ideas off of or get career advice from. So I do fulfill that role now and take a great deal of pride in it. A lot of our senior people still, at the very senior levels, tend to go through the political process as opposed to a career of diplomacy.
In the last couple of minutes mm-hmm. that we have, perhaps we can go through some of the events that are coming up during Black History Month. By the time this program goes out, the Lincoln showing will have happened, unfortunately, because this will go out on Monday 4th. However, you have several things that are going to be happening during the month. There's going to be a social media posting of notable African-American inventors, I see.
Yes, that should be good fun. We are focusing on those who have an impact in our daily lives, whether it's something like improving how shoes were made to one of my, not necessarily favorites, because it's a game that my children love, the Super Soaker. If you're a parent and have kids with a squirt gun, if it's that really, really big one that drenches you when they use it, it was invented by an African-American, who I'm not necessarily thanking for that, but he made money. We also have coming up on the 13th our first film showing, which is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, a classic comedy and an interesting exposition that I think will be interesting here in Malta, because it does discuss what you believe is the right thing, what you've been saying your whole life you think is the right thing, and then when confronted with it, a little introspection necessary, and fabulous actors all the way through. So I think it'll be great, and there'll be discussion afterwards. On February 19th, student teachers from the Faculty of Education at the University of Malta will explore innovative ways to teach poetry using African-American poetry. I'm looking forward to participating in that myself, so I'll read a couple of my favorite poems. On the 22nd, a flash mob is going to be scheduled for The Point, and hopefully we'll get the information out so those who want to participate can learn the steps. I'm hoping to participate in that too, if it's not too difficult. And hopefully everybody wants, yeah, it should be great fun. I've always wanted to do a flash mob. And on the 27th, another screening of Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, which won an award at the Cannes Film Festival when it came out, I think in 1989 is when it came out. And again, a powerful, searing movie with great music and some great actors, including Samuel Jackson and Ruby Lee and Ossie Davis and John Turturro. I mean, some really great actors and extraordinarily provocative. So the discussion of that should be good, too.
That's wonderful. Well, we've come to the end of our time, unfortunately. However, it would be nice, I think, to end up with the words that President Obama pledged in the spirit of the U.S. Constitution. Perhaps you'd like to say those words for us.
Indeed. Just talking about his last inauguration, he spoke about it in both, but in his last inauguration he said, in the spirit of the U.S. Constitution, we the people declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that still guides us, just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall, to hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in the series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.